This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Our topic is current scams and how to protect yourself from being a victim. My guest is Joe Rideout, R-I-D-E-O-U-T, Manager of Consumer Services at Consumer Action, the nonprofit consumer education and advocacy organization serving consumers in the United States. Joe Rideout is in the San Francisco office, and I want to give you the website because it's a very valuable one if you want to jot it down. And please be ready to take down some other information that I think you might find very helpful. www.consumer-action.org. www.consumer-action.org. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which certifies four areas of the law. Joe, it's nice to have you back.
My pleasure, Chuck. I'm happy to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's terrific. Would you do this for us? Review for us what consumer action is and what it means for consumers and what is available on the website.
Sure. We're a nonprofit consumer advocacy group that's been around since 1971. We have offices in San Francisco and as well Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. We offer over a million free publications every year to consumers who request them or to nonprofit organizations who share them with their members. They're available in up to 8 languages and deal with everything from how to choose a cell phone plan to how to buy a car to how to get a good credit card and use it wisely or how to improve a credit score that may need of improvement. Our website's consumer-action.org, and we also have other components of our website that deals not only with consumer education but also with some of our advocacy work, both in California at the federal level. And you can click on Take Action or some of the other links from our homepage to see what we're working on, because we work very hard to try to help bills along that would be, in our opinion, in favor of consumers and try to stop bills that are, in our opinion, would hurt consumers.
In the first half hour of the program, as you know, and I hope most of the listeners know, the program is live for a full hour in the Bay Area. It's live on the Internet for a full hour at www.klw.org. And it's also uplinked to the NPR satellite for national distribution. But the first half hour is the statewide version of the program, which is recorded and sent out to a number of stations in California, which will air the half hour next week. And one of the things I want to try to cover, or several of the things I want to try to cover in the first half hour of the statewide version, Joe, is some of the major scams that you are concerned about right now. And I know one of the things that you're concerned about is the Internal Revenue Service and private collection agencies. Will you tell us about that, and why are you concerned about it?
Yeah, this is a very interesting development that came as a big surprise to many consumers, and I'm not sure all consumers have even heard about it. But what has happened is that after really years and years, even decades of telling consumers that the IRS will never call you, because after all, a lot of scammers have posed as IRS agents and have demanded payments immediately through instruments like a wire transfer or green dot prepaid cards, things like that, or else some terrible misfortune would befall the taxpayer, such as being even arrested or their bank account would supposedly be levied immediately. Scams like this had existed for years, and for that reason, the IRS had told everybody in numerous outreach efforts and broadcasts that we will never call you. And so, lo and behold, within the last year, they have started to hire third-party collectors who indeed will be calling consumers, and they'll be trying to shake down consumers for their unpaid tax debt. Now, I mean, consumers should pay what they owe the federal government. I think everybody could agree on that if it's a legitimate debt, but it's very problematic in our opinion because, for one, it is a virtual guarantee that this will inspire enterprising scammers to pose as these private collectors and perhaps assuage initial concerns that potential victims could have that this is actually federal policy now. They actually hire out private debt collectors to do the IRS's work. And that is what's happening, and we're afraid that it's going to generate a multitude of scams capitalizing on this foolish decision by the IRS. And what's even worse, though, in some ways, is that this has been tried twice before, once in the 90s, once in 2006. And each time after the federal government tried to see whether or not private collectors could do a better job, because this is often a trope of Republican administrations, that, private firms can do a better job than these state or federal employees, what they found in each case was that it was a miserable failure, and it would have been far more cost-effective to simply hire more IRS collectors rather than outsource the job to these private firms who did a very poor job of it and collected a big cut for themselves, about 25%, but failed miserably to even achieve the results that the average IRS collector was achieving in the first place. They collected about one half of what the average collector was collecting the last time around. So it's been repeatedly a failure. It's inexplicable that the federal government would make this foolish decision to do it again. It winds up just being corporate welfare to some of the worst companies out there, debt collectors, and they don't even return the money to the Treasury that would be happening were the government to simply hire more IRS collectors.
Well, Joe, let me ask you this. If now that the IRS has done this, it has retained private collection agencies to contact consumers by phone, what do you direct or what do you suggest that consumers who, let's say, do owe some money to the IRS, how should they deal with this?
Well, here really is our take on this. Follow the guidelines that the IRS has told you for many years. Even though they now have outsourced some of their jobs to these private firms, still do what you've always did when you got a demand for federal tax payment by phone. Hang up and don't look back. Mm. Here's the reason. The IRS is only sending these accounts to these third-party collectors once a great number of years has passed, and they have been ineffective in getting any money out of the taxpayer.
Mm.
So by that time, they decided that these are candidates to be outsourced to these other firms. Meanwhile, after 10 years, your statute of limitations for federal tax debt is still ticking. These third-party firms cannot do what the IRS can do. They cannot, for example, garnish your wages. They cannot freeze or levy your bank account the way that the real IRS could. All that these firms can do is ask you to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And if they fail to get you to pay, then after an amount of time, they will send the account back to the IRS, and the IRS will resume collection activity. Now, once it's in the hands of the real IRS, then you run the risk of some of those awful things happening. Like your bank account.
Such as garnishment or...
These third-party firms can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually could be an advantage to somebody who has taxes that they can't pay, because they are at no risk for having their bank account seized by these private collectors. And all the while that it's in their hands, your statute of limitations clock is running. By the time it gets back to the IRS, you might be closer to the end of that clock, and you might be able to negotiate a better settlement with them, or who knows, it might even expire. But you needn't be worried about that these firms can do what an IRS collector can do, because they cannot. All they can do is badger you for repayment. So our advice is what the IRS's advice has been for many years. If it's somebody asking for payment over the phone, just hang up and don't even worry about it.
Can the IRS, the IRS itself, not a private collection agency, can it garnish someone's wages or go to someone's bank and put a hold on the bank account without some kind of a judgment?
Well, they would have to obtain a judgment. They would.
Okay.
They would. Many years in almost every case would pass. There'd be a lot of threatening notices that would get increasingly unfriendly. But they have a lot of power to simply take your money away. That for example. If you had a delinquent credit card account and then they sold it to a third-party collector, there's a lot of additional hurdles that third-party collector would have to clear before, and then obtain a judgment before your accounts, or before your funds could be seized or your wages could be garnished. The IRS or state tax collectors move much more rapidly if they want to. But these private collectors cannot do that.
But let me make sure I understand this. Are you saying that the IRS or the state tax collection government agency has to get a judgment against you before it can garnish either your wages or attach your bank account or whatever?
If enough time passes, no, they don't have to take you to court. They can just seize them if it's. That's my understanding.
Without a judgment.
No, I believe that if they have enough proof that you have not paid what you owe the federal government, then
they can do it.
Yeah.
And the statute of limitations on something like this is
10 years.
10 years. I see.
10 years.
All right.
So it's a long time. Good luck in trying to hope that some kind of clock that would run out. But one thing in your favor, if you are in that kind of terrible situation, is that the IRS. Itself would be much more willing to negotiate either a repayment plan or perhaps some kind of settlement that the private collector would not.
Okay.
Even if the statute of limitations doesn't run out, the continued expiration of more of it could potentially put you in a better position. There's no reason to settle with these private bozos. It's a waste of taxpayer money. It's corporate welfare to some of the worst corporations out there, and the government should just hire real collectors to do real IRS work.
I know you're very concerned about mandatory binding arbitration with respect to credit cards or cell phone agreements, et cetera, et cetera. Why are you concerned about that?
Well, it's very interesting. The phenomenon of binding mandatory arbitration has been creeping up really insidiously since the 90s. And what it involves is that when you as a consumer sign up for example, cell phone service or many bank accounts with large banks or many other things, gym memberships, some employment contracts. Deeply in the fine print is a provision that says that you have no right to sue this entity and take them to court or file a class action. The only way you can obtain relief is by going to an arbitration panel. And arbitration in principle is perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with arbitration per se. It's one of the many things that people can use to resolve dispute: arbitration, mediation, class actions, taking someone to court. But what these businesses have done has increasingly been to compel consumers to have these disputes heard only in arbitration panels that take basically hand-selected pro-business arbitrators that rule in favor of them in over 94% of the cases, according to one study in California. And it's virtually impossible for consumers to win because the deck is so heavily stacked against them. Once an arbitrator begins ruling in favor of the consumers, their contracts typically are not renewed. They are not brought back as arbitrators by the firms that are paying them to be there. So it's a very crooked racket, something that I think is absolutely fair to call a scam. And it's something that I believe in 5 or 10 years people just shake their heads incredulous that something like this could have been allowed to go on for so long because it really does nothing more than enrich corporations and rip off consumers and leave them out in the cold when they need some relief. I mean, you look at, for example, the Wells Fargo case where they committed 2 million cases of identity theft and opened fake bank accounts for people. Those consumers are under a binding mandatory arbitration agreement, and Wells Fargo actually
even though they never agreed to these.
Yeah, it's bad enough that if you, as a customer of Wells Fargo, walk into the bank and say, "Sure, I want to sign up for your account," and you agree to all their terms and conditions, and buried way deep down there is this one part that says, "Forget about your Seventh Amendment constitutional rights to have your disputes heard by a jury of your peers." That's bad enough, but here we're talking about a subset of people, 2 million, that didn't even agree to have the accounts opened in the first place. Mm-hmm. Yet the bank is insisting that even though you never agreed to have the account opened, you somehow agreed to have your dispute heard in arbitration. I mean, that's just beyond the pale.
Yes.
But luckily, in California at least, we have some pushback against this. There's a bill called SB 33. Which would deal with this kind of account fraud in which customers never agreed to have the account opened in the first place, yet are being held to the provisions of this binding mandatory arbitration agreement. If SB 33 were to pass, this would say that if somebody impersonated you or opened an unauthorized account, you would not lose your rights to take a company to court, or you would not be prohibited from binding together as a class action. And companies like Wells Fargo would be held to a greater level of accountability. Corporations like them love arbitration because it insulates them from accountability. Mm-hmm. But this bill in particular, it deals with contract formation, and it says that basically you could not agree to a binding arbitration for an account you never agreed to open.
Joe, where is this bill right now in our legislature, California legislature?
Well, right now, all bills they have to pass out of their house of origin. It's a Senate bill. It went through the Senate. Now it goes to the other house, the Assembly. It's in the Assembly. So if it were to pass the Assembly, then it would go to the governor's desk and hopefully get signed. So right now, if anybody who's interested in it, they could check out our webpage. They could check out the state ledge info page and find out more about SB 33. But right now it's in the Assembly, and it got out of the Senate, and we have high hopes that it'll make it through the second chamber, and the government will sign it.
So you have in Consumer Action on your website, www.consumer-action.org, consumer-action.org. Do you have some discussion about SB 33?
Yes, you can
you
find
do.
Some discussion about that, and we also have other discussion about matters pertaining to what prompted it. So, for example, we were called to testify at a Senate hearing in the wake of the Wells Fargo scandal, and we have some of the testimony that we provided.
Mm. Interesting. Let me take a brief break and give some announcements for listeners wherever they may be. Whether you're listening to the live program, and we are doing this live on Wednesday, this is July 5th, whether you're listening to this program live or hear it delayed, our next Call a Lawyer Night, when you can speak with an attorney off the air, no obligation on your part, will be on Wednesday night, July 26th at 7 p.m. Pacific time. You might want to jot down that number. Wherever you may be, in California or anywhere in the United States, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And if you are interested in getting any one of the free 11 pamphlets that the California Board of Legal Specialization has, or if you're looking for a specialist in any one of the 11 specialties, go to www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to the upper left of your screen to Legal Specialists and click that on. And if you're looking for a National Board of Trial Advocacy lawyers in the four specialties it has nationwide, including California, go to www.nbtalawyers.org, www.nbtalawyers.org. Joe, and for those of you who've tuned a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. We're talking about current scams and what you can do to protect yourself from becoming a victim. My guest is Joe Rideout. He's manager of consumer services at Consumer Action, which is a nonprofit consumer education and advocacy organization serving consumers in the United States. Joe, I know that you are also concerned about on social media, if I get this correct, advertising coupons, gift cards, etc. What's this all about?
What's been happening in the last few months is that we've seen fake gift cards and fake coupons for, department stores and companies like Bed Bath & Beyond or Home Depot, Target, Lowe's, etc., appearing in people's social media feeds or appearing as posts and ads on places like Facebook. And if a consumer clicks on these things, which purport to offer them a gift card or a very sizable coupon of up to $50, $75, you get directed to a website or a pop-up that's intended to capture your personal information that goes far beyond the information that a legitimate coupon site would want to collect, suggesting they just want to steal your identity. But it just goes to show that certainly there is fake news around today. Fake news is very likely to be found on your social media feed, and you really should direct any sign of these to something like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau or the Federal Trade Commission, who would be in a position to crack down on these kinds of scammers. But they're appearing as coupons and gift cards for a sizable amount of money as posts and ads on one's own social media feed or on the right side of your Facebook. And it's just one more of those things that looks too good to be true and indeed is.
One of the things I think that most, that probably at least a good percentage of consumers who are either accessing Facebook or one of the other social media groups is that any ad that comes on this social media, I think a lot of people, a very good or a very high percentage of people, would think that before some ad like this could be on social media, that the company, the social media company, would have investigated to make sure that this is legitimate. What do you say about that, Joe?
Well, I think that's a very good point, Chuck, and the companies that run the platforms do have an obligation to make sure that scams don't take over their content and rip off their users. That being said, a lot of the advertising is done automatically, and it can be very challenging or even impossible to distinguish between a very generous offer from what appears to be a Lowe's or a Bed Bath & Beyond and an outright scam that someone's trying to redirect people into to divulging personal information that they would never want to do. So, as users, it's important to indicate to the platform that this is either useless spam or this is an outright scam or something that's trying to rip me off or deceive me. And beyond that, to inform regulators that may usually do a lot more than the platform itself to hold the scammers accountable.
Now, when you say regulators, who are you referring to?
Well, people that would be in charge of the false advertising things, the Attorney General of your state,
or possibly the local district attorneys, the county district attorney's office.
Mm-hmm, yeah, the district attorney's offices often can do a lot. It can be more challenging for them to penetrate a behemoth like Facebook, but certainly it can be done. So it's worth advising all those people if you see something that doesn't look right.
Before we end the statewide version of the program, and I invite listeners who are listening to the live program as we go into a second half hour to call in on our toll-free number, and I'll give it right now that it's available to anyone. By the way, we're doing this program live on Wednesday, July 5th. Our toll-free number, and I'll be inviting you to call in just a few minutes, is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. I know there's one other thing in the remaining few minutes of the statewide version. We discussed before we went on the air that there are some, for example, health products or software, et cetera, where there's some kind of a low-cost trial offer, and if you're not fully aware of what's going on and get involved with this, it may be that you end up, beyond a certain period of time, the trial period, having to pay very substantial amount of money. Would you talk about that briefly, please?
Sure. This is a subspecies of negative option marketing, which is where if you don't proactively opt out, your rate jumps up into the stratosphere, and many consumers are not aware of it. Really, millions of people have been affected by this. They're automatic renewal offers or low-cost or free trial offers that morph after a period of weeks or a month into an expensive paid subscription. The free credit report scam was founded on this model. There are numerous other ones that have to do with health or quack health products that may be free or very low cost for the first few weeks and then might be $100 for the next installment. What they share in common is an easy way to sign up for the first time, and that involves capturing a consumer's credit or debit card number, and then unless they navigate back to that site, and which sometimes can be very difficult. We hear from consumers who spend days trying to get through to the right person because there's no way to simply opt out on the website. If you don't opt out in time, then you wind up being billed in perpetuity, and there is no way to cancel it at that point. You still have to pay the bill. What really should have to happen is that for any company who has a good product that can stand on its own 2 feet, the consumers really want to buy, they should have to go back and obtain the consent of the consumer for the second time. If, you know, after 2 weeks and the free trials offer, you don't just bill somebody for $100 the next time. That company should have to go back to someone and obtain their consent a second time. Do you want to continue? Would you like to continue the subscription? Here's what it's going to cost you. Would you like our product? That's what, unfortunately, is not the case. Our federal regulators show very little interest in this. But fortunately, in California, we are seeing a legislative effort to do away with this and compel companies to make sure you really want the product before you get charged an arm and a leg after a free trial or low-cost trial expires. This is a bill called SB 313, and it would, it would require companies to obtain your consent before your free week of maybe it's virus scanning or whatever. They would have to go back and make sure you wanted to pay the second installment of $50 or $100 without forcing you to opt out. You would have to opt into this, and then that's really the fair way to do it, because the state of affairs right now is where you have millions of Americans who get billed for something they never really wanted in the first place. They just wanted to try the product and then either forgot about it or found the process too cumbersome or time-consuming to obtain a cancellation, and as a result got ripped off by that company. That should be the way it is. SB 313 would do away with that.
Well, let's hope that that passes. We have come, by the way, to the end of the statewide Virgin Half Hour, but we'll continue for those people, those of you who are listening to the live program. All right, everybody, let me give you our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on current scams and how to protect yourself from becoming a victim. I hope that you will join us if you have a question, comment, etc. My guest is Joe Rideout, R-I-D-E-O-U-T. He's Manager of Consumer Services at Consumer Action, a nonprofit consumer education and advocacy organization serving consumers in the United States. The website is, and it's a very fine website, I highly recommend you take a look at it, www.consumer-action.org, www.consumeraction.org. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149. That's 650-369-4149. Most counties, nearly all counties in California, have a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is, and they'll do their best to find an experienced attorney to set you up for half an hour consultation. And with minor exception, you will pay for that half an hour consultation with the attorney anywhere between $25 to $35. The money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service, and it's a great consumer service, something I hope you don't need it, but something that's available to you if you do need some basic information. And for those of you who are in the San Francisco Bay Area, the San Mateo County Law Library is having a presentation on neighbor law. And this will be in Redwood City. Being a good neighbor, I think we all appreciate, is important. Having a good neighbor is even better. And so if you're interested in boundary disputes, overgrown trees and shrubs, or noise, which are just a few of the issues that neighbors deal with regularly, attorney Greg Rubens will discuss legal and non-legal means to resolve disputes and tips for harmonious living in your neighborhood. Wouldn't that be nice, huh? And you're invited to attend this free lecture at the Law Library. This is going to be on Thursday, July 12th, Thursday, July 13th, starting at noon. And it's at the Law Library, 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City, again on Thursday, July 13th, starting at noon. And if you'd like more information, the library number is 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And I've just been corrected with here, it's consumer-action.org. How do you say it, Joe?
You know, I sometimes say dash, but I think it is actually, like, if you really want to be a grammar nerd, I think a hyphen is one character, a dash is two characters.
Boy, so I am going to
slap all the grammar nerds out there.
I'm going to slap my hand on my hand with my other hand. I will have to use hyphen from now on. And so I hope all of you got that. Consumer-action.org, of course, www at the beginning. All right, let's do this. I want to start with Owen. Owen's on the phone. Owen, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Oh, Gwen. Oh, it looks like
Hi.
Owen.
Oh, hi. Yes,
Gwen, pardon me. The G looks like an O, and that's my fault too. Boy, I'm really making more mistakes than I should. Go ahead, Gwen.
So I refinanced in 2012. I have a condo, and the building has a valid, up-to-date hazard insurance. But my when I refinanced, I got a new loan servicing center, LoanCare, and they're corrupt, and
Ooh.
they will refuse to recognize my hazard insurance, and without spending too much time proving that they won't recognize it. I mean, I sent it to them by, you know, through the coverage info website. I sent it snail mail. I sent it many different ways. They have gone ahead and purchased this wind insurance.
Hmm.
And
without your permission.
Without my permission, they will refuse to recognize. I even called them on the phone. You know, I got them to acknowledge on May 3rd that they did get my info, but then when I called again, no, they didn't. So they purchased $1,600 worth of wind insurance that I cannot get them. So, and then they quickly changed my mortgage payments to, like, absorb this new payment, and you don't even see it on my statement anymore.
Gwen,
really fishy.
Gwen, let me stop you right now. You live in Oakland, do you not?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Have you contacted the district attorney's office or the Alameda County DA's office on this?
I did not.
I think you should. Let me just suggest that you contact the Alameda County DA's office, Consumer Protection Unit. You can, Google for the Alameda County DA's office. I think what you should do, being a deputy DA in consumer protection for San Mateo County for many, many years, this is what I would suggest you do. You contact them. Find out how you can file a complaint with them and ask them if they will look into this. I think you should do this.
Okay.
So Google them or go to telephone information and give the Alameda County DA's office a call. Ask for the Consumer Protection Unit and then find out what you have to do. Do you have some thoughts for her, Joe?
Well, yeah, this is called forced-placed insurance, and it can be very painful for a consumer. It often involves flood insurance as well as
sure.
Gwen is experiencing. But yeah, when a lender realizes that the homeowner's policy either is lapsed or is delinquent, in their opinion, they say it's not enough,
mm-hmm.
the coverage is not sufficient, then they can take this step of buying their own insurance, which, big surprise, it's much more than what a consumer would ever pay for such insurance on his or her own, up to 10 times as much.
Oh, my.
So I'm not sure how much Gwen was paying before, but I'm pretty confident it must be a multiple of what she'd been paying before, because it is a way in which consumers can be very wrong. There have been class actions filed against these kinds of forced placed insurance, and she should take a look at that to see if she might be part of one, because it is a very controversial practice that, you know, in some cases involve a legitimate beef with a homeowner that is not doing enough to protect the bank's asset when they have a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
But in other cases, is just a way for these lenders and insurance companies to just roast the consumer and charge them far more than they would ever pay on their own.
Do you feel, you know, I'm coming from the perspective of a deputy district attorney, consumer action or consumer unit, consumer protection unit, a viewpoint of trying to protect the consumer. Do you feel that, as I suggested to Gwen, it would be good for her to contact the Alameda County DA's office, consumer protection unit?
I don't think it would hurt to. I think her best step actually would be to contact the California Department of Insurance.
Ah.
We have an excellent insurance commissioner, Dave Jones.
Yeah.
And they've really done a good job for consumers. I'm not sure necessarily what would come from this particular case, but we have a very good insurance commissioner, and for abuses by insurance companies, that's where you want to go first, the Department of Insurance.
Gwen, so Google the California Department of Insurance and find out what the... In years past, I have worked very closely with them, and they are excellent. So I suggest you do that, too.
Thank you, I will.
Okay, take care. Thank you very much for calling, and I hope you have some luck on this.
Thank you.
Here is, by the way, everyone, here's a something a little bit detailed, but I think maybe it's something that at least a reasonable percentage of people may be confronted with. And this comes from a consumer too obviously brought into the studio here. And this is what the consumer is saying. I am constantly getting emails from different banks asking me to update my information to my online banking account. And she mentions Capital One, says, quote, "We noticed you haven't updated your account. You must to avoid the account being suspended." Chase Bank has said in this email she's received that recent security upgrades were made to their database and that she should verify her information. U.S. Bank has emailed her saying that my online account has been suspended because I violated the terms of service. B of A has said it looks like someone tried to log onto my account using an unknown device and will suspend unless I verify information. And Wells Fargo asks her to confirm a transaction and my online account was suspended. And here's what she says in the next paragraph. I do not have online accounts or even physical accounts with these banks, but only with Bank of America. When I click on the email from the sender, it goes to an email address with a .edu address. And her question is this, are these all coming from scammers? What happens if I click on them? How can I stop them? And what thoughts do you have on this, Joe?
Well, this sounds almost certainly like a scam, and I mean, particularly with an EDU URL. I mean, you just think about it. I mean, how many people are there? They're certainly in the minority, but many people choose not to engage in online banking at all. They prefer to visit a brick-and-mortar store, or they don't have any kind of use of the online interface the bank provides. It's not the way I bank, but it's the way some people bank, and it's perfectly fine if you don't use the online services. Any kind of outreach like that is going to be almost certainly a scam. It reminds me of another kind of spam that falls into my email box a lot about supposedly there was a postal delivery that failed or a USPS package that didn't arrive or even a Amazon account is going to be closed unless you take certain apps. These really are all attempts just to capture your personal information and steal your identity at a later date. And really, the way to verify them, if you really need to, is just to contact the institution directly that supposedly needs the information. Pay no attention to whatever phone number or contact info is on the message, you know, because even if you click on something and it takes you to a website and you don't fill in the information, that clicking on the website itself might implant some some virus or malware on your computer that they could capture information anyway. So certainly don't click anything on the message, but contact any institution or bank that you suspect might be sending you something that's troublesome like that, and they almost certainly will say, no, of course not. That's not how we would do things.
How can a consumer like this make these, obviously, scammers, since she has, other than having an account with Bank of America, how can she stop this scamming being done? And this is not being done by legitimate banks. It's being done by scammers.
It's all the same person or people sending slightly varied email messages saying, this one's from Capital One, this one's from Wells Fargo, this one's from Citibank, etc. But it's all coming from the same people, almost certainly. It's surprising how much damage a small number of scammers can do. There was just a recent basically the punishment of people who had been doing these mortgage refinancing or mortgage rescue scams in California for many years. And it was just a small handful of people that caused many millions of dollars in damage and hundreds of homeowners to fall victim to these mortgage rescue scams a long time ago. They actually did some real, due to do some real hard times, surprisingly, about 109 months, I think they were sentenced to. But yeah, sometimes it's just a small group, but especially if you're just going via email, you can affect many millions of people who are on the receiving end. But this kind of a message should just be deleted or ignored, or if you're getting too many of them, it's probably time to perhaps abandon your email address.
Oh, really? Okay.
It depends on how much of the spam you're getting.
Yeah.
If you're getting overrun with spam, the day may come in which you just have to get a new email address and start fresh and be much more scrupulous about whom can obtain the means by which to contact you by email.
If you don't abandon your email address and get a new one, where would you suggest this consumer who sent in this or presented this thing about the emails from the different banks, where might she go to get to report this, other than obviously calling the real banks and trying to get information? Where would you suggest she go to try to have this either investigated or whatever?
Well, it wouldn't hurt to inform the Federal Trade Commission.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, their hands are full. They don't even do much with big-time illegal debt collection violators. So will they do much for an individual case like this? Probably not, but it doesn't hurt. They sometimes do. Mm-hmm. And even if they don't, what they also do is share this information via a tool called Sentinel with all the other law enforcement entities, like district attorneys, attorneys general. So if enough of these complaints come in, any one of these entities could act on their own to try to put a stop to it, because they share information through this consumer sentinel tool. So it certainly is worthwhile to inform any one of those entities, because they will share it, and once enough people have been affected, that sometimes encourages these slow-moving beasts to take action.
Well, you would hope so. All right, we have Sarah. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello?
Hi, Sarah. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. I've had a department store credit card for over 20 years with the same United States Post Office address. And a few years ago, Capital One, I don't know the right word, but they took over the issuing new cards and so forth and managing the account rather than the department store.
Mm-hmm.
And they now claim that federal law, which they do not cite, requires that I provide a physical address in addition to my long-term post office address.
Mm.
And I would prefer not giving that to Capital One.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked online to try and find the federal law and found privacyrights.org, and they did, I don't know if they included all of the law, but said that the law requires banks, credit unions, even casinos to that customers need to provide a physical address, but it says nothing about credit cards.
What do you say about that, Joe?
I say that's a very good question that I can't give you a confident answer to. They certainly, the hoops that financial institutions have to jump through are greater today than they were 20 years ago, and sometimes that includes a little more intrusive of a look into verifying that the customer says who they claim to be. So I don't know for sure, but this may be a case where once Capital One assumed, you know, administration of these department store accounts, that they have a different policy than the original bank did, and that they, banks sometimes will say that we're required to do so by federal law, and that may just be the bank's policy. I don't know whether that's the case here, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's all this is, and they're giving their employees a script that is defective. But it also wouldn't surprise me if it is a real requirement that, the bank has to do that may not have been in place when you originally obtained the card, because the hoops that banks themselves have to jump through these days are much greater.
Sarah, let me ask you this. Sarah, let me ask you this, if you don't mind.
Yes.
You know for sure that you are dealing with Capital One, which is a legitimate bank. Do you not?
Is it a bank? I didn't know it was a bank.
Well, whatever it is.
Yeah, One's a bank.
Okay.
Every credit card you have is, you know, there's a bank that you pay. It has a Visa or MasterCard logo, which processes payments, but ultimately it's a bank that's getting your money.
So,
Capital One is a bank. They have branches in many states.
So, Sarah, you know that this is a legitimate corporation that you're dealing with, do you not?
Well,
you
I
don't
think
know that.
So.
Do you have anything in writing from them, any kind of contract, etc.? You've used the card, have you not?
Yes.
And do you know that you made payments on it, and do they send you statements to your post office box?
No, the statements come from the department store, not the Capital One.
Okay, and have you talked with anyone at the department store to verify that Capital One now is the one that is in charge of the credit cards for the department store?
No, they did on their letterhead sent a letter requesting it. I mean, it is under the department store letterhead.
Yeah, I think maybe the best way to get to the bottom of it would be to contact Capital One. I mean, ultimately, the bank is who's receiving your payments. I mean, they have an agreement with the department store that you have the card's name in. But it's ultimately the bank that's making the decisions about these sorts of things. And
okay.
You know, in situations like, for example,
bank.
Somebody doesn't pay their bill, it's not the department store, but the bank that'll come after you to collect it. Really, whoever is initiating this policy would be the bank and not the department store.
So Sarah, my question, what I've been trying to do is leading up to, why are you so concerned about giving to a legitimate company here at Capital One? Why are you so concerned about giving your personal residence address?
For privacy reasons.
What do you think they're going to do? I mean,
I've just heard on other consumer shows, and perhaps even this one, that Capital One can be very aggressive.
Well, I'm not sure. Are you having problems with Capital One at this point?
No, I've never dealt with them other than this department store, and as I said, it's at arm's length.
How long have you had now this Capital One card?
Over 20 years with the department store.
No, I understand.
Capital One entered into it just a few years ago.
Well, you say a few years ago, but you haven't had a problem with Capital One over these last few years, have you?
I don't use the card very much anymore.
I see. All right.
Yeah. I would really suggest, Sarah, just calling up Capital One and saying, like, I'm not comfortable with this. Can you verify that this is a real quest? Because it certainly is not impossible that this is an imposter trying to get personal information from you for who knows what purpose, and it has nothing to do with the bank's policy. It may well have to do with what the bank is required. required to ask you to provide, but the best place to get that information would be Capital One.
Have you tried doing, Sarah, have you tried doing that?
Well, I plan to do that tomorrow and then tuned in and heard your show.
Yeah, okay. Well, all right. Well, good luck. Good luck, and I hope you find out something that eases your concern about this.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for calling, Sarah.
Bye.
I'm sure you're not the only person who perhaps is faced with this. We have in the remaining program about 6 minutes left. What else would you like to bring up that we haven't even touched upon at this point, Joe?
Well, it's I guess it's a tough time for consumers nowadays, and it's one of the things that we're very concerned about is the ultimate fate of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Oh yeah, I am. You know, I'm very concerned about that.
Yeah,
talk a little bit about that.
Followed, you know, it's under attack for being too aggressive against the companies that it polices. But if you look at it another way, it's quite possibly the most cost-effective federal bureau of all time. I mean, there was a look at how much the CFPB had returned to consumers once they busted up the frauds or held, you know, banks accountable for overcharging consumers. They had returned over $12 billion to consumers, a huge, gigantic multiple of what the Bureau's annual budget actually is. Mm-hmm. I mean, so really, this is the antithesis of government waste. It's actually holding companies accountable when they do wrong, and it's not just paying for itself, it's paying in gargantuan multiples of what it costs to run the CFPB. So it's very troublesome when we hear plans to for example, eliminate the director of the CFPB and replace a directorship with a bipartisan commission, like a five-member panel, and it would turn it into really a joke of a federal agency in terms of consumer protection at like the Federal Communications Commission. The FCC simply lies down like a dog when it comes to anything to do with consumers because it is designed specifically to do nothing, which is what you get when you have these bipartisan...
You're saying the FCC?
The FCC.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really... is a somnambulant and ineffective agency precisely because there is so much contention between the five commissioners. And, you know, the ideas that the Republicans have and to change the CFPB into something similar is because they know how badly the FCC or the Federal Elections Commission, like how poorly they respond once they are turned into that kind of a structure, to change the structure from a directorship that's been immensely effective, historically effective in helping advance consumer rights, into something that's a commission. They know exactly what that would do, and that would be almost worse than simply eliminating the Bureau altogether, because it would give the illusion that it's still there for consumers, when in reality it will cease to exist in any meaningful way once it's turned into a commission.
Does Consumer Action have any discussion about the CFPB and it's facing perhaps a major change or anything to do with it whatsoever on the website yet?
We do. If you search our website, you'll find, for example, comments that we've submitted to the federal government. We've spoken out many times in favor of the CFPB and all it's done over the last five-plus years to defend consumers. And some of our analysis of what the major hurdles will be over the coming months to make sure that the CFPB stays protected, and also how people can let their own elected officials know that it's important to them to maintain the CFPB in a position to protect consumers.
So let's
take action off our homepage, and that can put you in touch with your own elected officials at the state or federal level, and you can let them know what you think.
Let's take one more very brief question or comment from Rod. Rod, you have about half a minute. Present it, please.
Okay. If you're calling a credit card company, you should try to call using the number that's on the card, but not the email.
Say that again. Rod, say that again.
Call if you want to talk to a credit card company, look on the back of the card and call the number. Don't use the number that might be on the red website you're looking at.
Yes.
Which might be a fake.
So you, all
very
right,
true,
use the telephone number on the back of the credit card.
Yeah.
To make sure.
Or on your statement.
Okay.
Not the email.
You know you're dealing with the real entity.
Yeah. Very good, Rod. Very good point. Very good point. Yeah. Let's be very careful about phone numbers on emails, et cetera, et cetera. Rod, thanks for calling in. That was very nice. Very good. Well, we are getting very close. I think we have about a minute and a half before I got to say goodbye to you, Joe. Any parting thought you would like to make at this point?
Well, I guess maybe I'll just follow up on what Rod was saying. To go even further than what Rod said, to call the bank's number directly. In order to save time and avoid being sent around from place to place, there's a good website that many listeners probably have heard of called gethuman.com. It provides the best pathway to speak to a representative of your credit card company or other large company in as quickly as possible. So it'll indicate you press 1, then 3, then
what's the name of...
in order to get to a live representative. It can save you some time. Gethuman.com.
What's the name again?
Gethuman.com is the name of it.
Okay, spell it
it's
for
us. It's a good website. It's become a little more cluttered
spell
over the last few years, but it's still a good one for getting the right.
Joe, spell it for us.
GETHUMAN.com, gethuman.com.
Okay. Like, I have never heard of this, but thank you very much. We are just about out of time. Gethuman.com. Well, that sounds like something that we would like to have, and I think we will end with that. Joe, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Thank
Wonderful
you so much.
To have you on the program again. Joseph Rideout, Manager of Consumer Services at Consumer Action, the nonprofit consumer education and advocacy organization serving consumers in the United States. Joe's in the San Francisco office. The website is www.consumer-action.org. You got it right, Joe, huh?
That's it. That sounds good.
Yeah. Joe, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Next time on Your Legal Rights, our topic will be the mission and laws of the Department of Homeland Security, the prevention of and responding to terrorism and hate crimes, and the responding to natural disasters by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. My guest will be Martin Alperin, attorney and author of Foundations of Homeland Security Law and Policy, and certified specialist in criminal law, Jeff Hayden, chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization, and Michael Berg, a member of the board of the California Board of Legal Specialization. That's next time. Your Legal Rights production staff people are program engineer Debbie Kennedy. Lovely to have you here, Debbie. Production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. By the way, if you would like to listen to the full hour, Your Legal Rights is available as a podcast free of charge at www.kalw.org/subscribe. Thanks for listening to Your Legal Rights. And join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.